But so 2019, I started a project called Old Dog, New Tricks. And it was really to challenge myself. See, can my body, can I learn new things? Is it totally possible? And can I actually improve as I get older? And so that took a lot of pressure off, because it really wasn't about winning. It wasn't about being good. It was about, well, how far can I go? And with the emphasis on, and actually enjoy the process.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Jane Talbot. Jane is a runner, swimmer, adventurer from Northern Ireland. We had a great conversation about all things running, as well as some of the other adventures that she is working on. She is a very adaptable, adventurous person. Enjoyed our conversation. Hope you enjoy listening in. Here's my conversation with Jane Talbot. So zero is right at freezing is the temperature.
Yeah, because we're on, we tend to still measure in Fahrenheit and Celsius. So,
Really? That can be really confusing.
Yeah. It depends how old you are. So I'm at that age where we use both. So I'm coming up to 60, so I'm old enough to remember both. Same with metric, like we weigh in pounds and stones, our body weight, and in kilograms. We're bilingual.
I talked to somebody else who was Holly, that we were talking about that the weight is, you know, actually in stone. And you know, stone was something that I remember hearing, and it was totally foreign to me. I was like,
because you're all pounds, aren't you?
We're all pounds. There was a move to try to switch to metric. So we used to have the banks would display the temperature in Celsius and Fahrenheit because they were trying to switch us over. It never did catch on here too much resistance. We've stayed with it's actually the original, they call it the British system, you know, the pounds and miles and inches and feet and yards and miles. But you know, as a runner, they measure distances in kilometers. And so
here it depends on the racing. So we have 5K race, 10K race, and then everything's in miles. So half marathons and full marathons are measured in miles. So and we have some 5-mile races. That's a standard. Okay. It's all mixed up.
Well, it's kind of interesting.
On our Garmin, we get up.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing
our
here.
Our Garmin's measuring our.
The Garmin's measure in miles or kilograms or kilometers. So, can you switch them back and forth easily?
You can switch them back and forth, but the auto set for here is miles per hour. So in the mile rate. So I'm at the age where that thing. So my kilometers per hour rate doesn't mean anything to me.
Right. Well, and I have a hard time. People, you know, we had somebody ran with us in our running group, and she measures in kilometers, and so she was talking about how fast she ran, and she gave it kilometers per hour, and I couldn't do the conversion. It was just like it didn't match. But here the runners that I run with, you know, we have both. You know, we've got the 5K, 5K races and 10K races, and then. Then you go to half marathons, which is measured in miles, and marathons are measured in miles. Then they go to the 50K.
Yeah, I know. That's weird, isn't it?
And then the next one is the 50-mile. Yeah. And then the next distance is the 100K. Mm. So we switch back and forth. And so, then the next one is 100-mile. We as runners, we kind of here in the United States, we kind of flip back and forth. Now, a lot of people, once they get to marathon, they're like, no, I'm done. I'm not going any farther than that.
Yeah, yeah.
But once you get into the ultra marathon world, it's kind of like you kind of slip into this, well, how far can I go?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How far and how slow? Just how slow can I go before I stop?
Well, I've gotten to the point where my first attempt at 100 mile, I was on pace. I was doing fine. I knew I was going to finish before the cutoff. But we had rain, and so it slowed me down, and I missed it. So then I entered another 100 mile, which was on road, which was I hadn't trained on road at all, which was that was difficult. But I made the cutoff. I was able to make it. But since then, I have slowed down some, and so now I'm looking at races that have the cutoff and going, I don't know if I can do that. So in order to run 100 miles, I may have to go into the timed races that give you 36 hours. So
yes.
So yeah, it's one of those things I started looking at, and then I thought, well, maybe I can get the speed back. I don't know.
Well, and I think maybe racing will change though, because as the population ages and as people are becoming more committed to active lifestyles, and I think longevity, the concept of vital long life is kind of catching on.
Yes.
Maybe they'll adjust cutoffs to accommodate. Yeah. Plus the older people have more time and more money. It's from a racing, race organization point of view. So it's a rich seam, I think.
It is. Mm. And especially as people come into it. I mean, I looked at on my 100 mile, my second 100 mile race that I entered, I was looking at the people in my age group and thought, because I'm 65 now. And the people who are over 60, they were running times that were 24 hours, and I was like, that was on my best day. I don't know that I'd be able to run that fast, even when I was younger. But I didn't start running until I was 60. So.
Oh, did you? Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing, because normally, I used to run ultra. I'm switched. I'm experimenting with speed at the moment.
Uh-huh.
And normally, I did my first race was a 10K.
Okay.
I come from my dad's an elite runner, and so I always thought I was rubbish at running because it was always comparative. Mm-hmm. But I've discovered actually I was actually quite a good runner. I didn't realize, and I started at 10K, and then I went straight to half marathon and marathon, and I missed out the experience of 5K. So I'm doing more sort of fast running at the moment. Well, for my age, the whole thing was it's miles in your legs, and don't attempt an ultra until you've done so many marathons. You've probably been running 10, 20 years. And so I didn't do my first ultra until my 40s, but I'd been running, 20 years. And I think it's absolutely incredible that you've just started running at 60 and there you've got these 100 milers done. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, my first goal, when I started, I should back up. I did a marathon back when I was in my 30s, but then I quit. And I was right at 30 years old, and I quit running, and I got out of shape and just,
What made you stop? And,
mindset. I just didn't have the mindset that I needed. And so, and I struggled. I identified some of my limiting beliefs when I was in my 40s, and then couldn't get over them. Knew where they, did all the reading, knew where my limiting beliefs came from. I knew how I got them. I knew what they were, knew what they were doing, but I was stuck. It was just like, I couldn't change that subconscious feeling. And, it wasn't until 2017 that I really got the mindset piece of it done. But I didn't have that kind of motivation to keep going when I was in my 30s. So I had gotten out of shape, and in 2017 I lost 30 pounds, I'd done that first, and then I saw my friend had done a 50 mile trail race, and I went, I bet I've lost enough weight. I bet I might be able to run again.
Yeah.
And so, uh, So,
well, I think that's the brilliant thing. It's never too late. And what a poster boy for, you know, starting late or restarting. Because lots of people, I think, they sort of say, I'm done. And that's it, I'm done. And they draw a line. And that psychological line is really strong.
It is. And I see people who are my age or even younger who, you know, they've done what they think they can in life, and they're just coasting till death. And I'm thinking, I'm just getting started. You know, I'm not. And I kind of had that in my mind anyway. You know, people had talked about, you know, retirement and everything. I was like, I'm never going to retire. I always want to have something that I'm working toward and keep going until the end. You know? So I don't understand the people who at age 40 go kind of like, well, this is as good as it gets, and I'm just going to ride out the rest of my life from here.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah. So you said you started running at...
in my early 20s. Okay. I resisted it as long as I could. Because, you know, it's a whole family thing. I was from a family of school teachers. And my dad, we had a television program in the UK in the 70s called Superstars, where all these sports stars from different sports would compete, do squat thrusts and pull-ups and pull, you know, huge weights and cycle. It was right across the, you know, spectrum of, you know, strength and endurance. And then my dad used to get us in the street to do these things as a game. And I absolutely hated it. And, you know, it's when, you know, you live in that environment of being, you know, healthy food and do this. And then everything in me said, I'm not doing any of that. I'm not doing any of that. And then lo and behold, by my 20s, I had become a school teacher. You know, the genes came out and I started to run. And I worked for Land Rover, the vehicle manufacturer.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it was a quite a familial environment. And it was probably one of the rare companies in the United Kingdom where you made friends at work and you socialized with people outside of work. And we did activities together. So I joined a mountaineering team. And so my running, you know, had this focus, was I was running not to run, but to become fit enough to do something else. But, you know, it often happens when you're not looking, the thing that you weren't focusing on actually becomes the thing that you're actually better at. But I think I didn't really train properly in those days. So that was like the late 80s, early 90s. We had, you know, Runner's World magazine, you know.
Right.
And there were sort of published schedules in there. But I never really followed anything. And I mixed it in with aerobics, and that was really big in the 90s. And I really enjoyed that. So I was physically active, but not sports specific, and really wasn't applying much science to my training. And then in my late 20s, we moved up to Scotland, and I got pregnant, had my first child, my only child, unfortunately. And I was in this small rural community, and I really wanted to do something. So I trained as a fitness instructor, an aerobics instructor, a gym instructor, and did athletics coaching training. And that's, I suppose, where I really understood what the science was about. And I really got into getting my training schedules from Runner's World, followed them to the letter. And I started to get results. Oops, I can't see you. Can you see me?
I can see you.
Oh, well, my screen's gone blank, but I'll carry on talking if you can hear me.
Okay, I can hear you. Yeah, it just looked like it might have been a glitch because you stopped for just a minute. So, okay.
And then running became a way of staying connected with my parents because they were living 8 hours away in England. I had a small child, and then we used to race all around the country, and my mum and dad would come and we'd book a bed and breakfast. And I tried all sorts of races, and it was that collecting medals, not really worrying too much about the time or whether I was going to have a podium spot. I mean, looking back at how I trained, I would never get a podium spot. And and it didn't really matter. I think once I did, I was in a fell race, or you might call them mountain races or
I've talked to a fell runner she's starting to be a fell runner a couple of episodes back, and
I entered one of those. I thought, well, I'll give that a go, and I won, and that's because my husband, who used to sort of draft behind me, he peeled off in the wrong direction and everybody followed him because they thought, oh, he's the man who knows where to go. So I won because everybody had gone the wrong direction. I felt absolutely brilliant. And then I started biting off bigger chunks. So I did fell races that had the highest mountains, you know, in England. They're not very high, but, you know, it's, you know, it's, it was a 17.
Anytime you're running straight up a hill, it's.
It's hard.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. It doesn't matter how high it is.
Yeah. You're out all day, but my mum and dad were there with cakes, you know, at various strategic positions. So running for me was about connection and also really head time. You know, as I had a young child and he never slept, he didn't sleep for the first 10 years of his life. I was tired all the time.
10 years, oh my goodness.
He turned into a genius though, so I think that's what it was, 10 years. But that was my time for myself. And now I'm, you know, heading towards 60, running and sport is a whole different thing for me. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, we touched on it earlier, it's really about having a vital life as long as possible. And that's also something I've inherited from my father. You know, he'd send me emails about, you know, have you seen this thing? So we're on the, everything's in the porridge. Turmeric's in the porridge. Beetroot's in the porridge. Everything is in the porridge.
Well, that's, and porridge is, that's oats.
Oatmeal.
Yeah. And that's, I was pretty sure that's what that's, you know, that, I mean, I used to read. I was a English lit major in college, and so, you know, read, you know, British lit, and so there's, I know, a difference in the usage of how what we identify. But yeah, I was trying to remember that was oats. Yeah.
Well, I could actually pass, you know, my green card if it was all about American recipes, because I'm in a lot of plant based recipe groups on Facebook. Okay. So mm-hmm. I know it all. I know about overnight oats and I know about steel cut oats. We don't call them that. You know, I could pass. I reckon I mm-hmm. could pass.
Yeah, that's good. So are you plant based then?
I am plant based. That's another thing about trying to live forever. So I've been plant-based for the last 2 years. And to be honest, I am, you know, it's an experiment. And I think this whole thing for me, this next phase of my life is experimenting, because I am postmenopausal now. And I had a real glitch in my performance. I went from podium spots to feeling totally mortal, something I hadn't felt for years, like that my body was kind of giving up. Mm-hmm. And so I tried everything. I tried adaptogens, which didn't do anything for me, like, you know, maca and ashwagandha and all that kind of mm-hmm. thing. I didn't sleep for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then I tried plant-based for recovery, because I thought, well, maybe I am just like overtraining or burnt out, and maybe there's too much inflammation in my body. So I went all out plant-based. And to be honest, I'd found what the menopause for me was the opposite for most women. I found it difficult to keep weight on. I found it difficult to keep muscle mass on, even though I lift very heavy weights. And I was eating until the cows come home, and I would have to get up in the night mm-hmm. to actually fuel myself. And then with plant-based eating, it can be a little bit more difficult to get all the calories in, but the food mm-hmm. is absolutely delicious. So I have it cracked now, and I'm not sure that it makes a difference to performance. HRT, or you call it MHT, menopause hormone therapy, that was a game changer for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of back on track, and I feel now as if I'm 30 in a older body, whereas before I felt like it was 95 in the 50 something's body. So, you know, I think for women it is, and I think that's why I'd moved, but people who've known me for years would have known me as an endurance runner. Mm-hmm. And because my endurance plug got pulled, and that's a very common thing to happen to athletes in their menopausal years, and that's for various reasons. It's come back now, thanks to the MHT, which has worked for me, but I didn't lose speed. So I thought, right, what I'm going to do, I'm going to play the speed card. How far can I go? And it's not my background. So it's, mm-hmm, everything's new to me. So I went to the track. I competed on the track for the first time in 2019, 400 and 800 meters. So 800 meters is like, it's the equivalent of an ultramarathon, I think.
Yes, that's what it feels like.
Yeah. And I had to learn how to race out of blocks. And there are pictures of me, and you can see me laughing because I'm so bad at it. Everybody was like, you know, halfway around the track. I did catch up. But, it, you know, there's real skill, and you're using a different energy system. And so I took the opportunity. I'm 50, coming on for 57 now. But so 2019, I started a project called Old Dog, New Tricks. And it was really to challenge myself. See, can my body, can I learn new things? Is it totally possible? And can I actually improve as I get older? And so that took a lot of pressure off, because it really wasn't about winning. It wasn't about being good. It was about, how far can I go? And with the emphasis on, and actually enjoy the process. And so I'm someone who really likes learning, and that can be academic learning, it could be my body learning. And I knew nothing about these things. So I knew nothing about racing on the track, and I joined an athletics club. And I, you know, I was running around the track with 8-year-olds to 10-year-olds who were thrashing me. I was right at the back, because I'd never run in spikes. I'd never run on a track. So I set myself the goal of having a go at powerlifting. Mm-hmm. I had a go at track running. I'm not from a swimming background. I could swim breaststroke, old school breaststroke. I couldn't swim the length of a pool front crawl. So I thought, right, let's see if I can learn to swim butterfly. And I went to a coach and I said, look, you know, I've managed to run, compete at 200, 400 meters. And I did well, you know, I got silver medals. And you know, I was hoping that he would say, this all bodes well. And he said, Jane, sorry, but I can't guarantee you can actually do this, because you've chosen one of the hardest things to do, because it's quite a technical stroke, requires a lot of strength. And I said, look, don't worry. I just want to have a go. I just want to see how far we can get in 12 weeks. And I set up a race with a friend of mine who's 10 years younger than me, ex-Kiwi international swimmer, butterfly specialist. I said, look, let's have a race, one-on-one, in water start, because I hadn't learned how to dive. And we had the race set up for 3 months to the day that I started to learn to swim butterfly. And I did it. And I, you know, obviously I did come second, still a podium position.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah, and for me, it was like, actually, that really was a hard thing. So I treat everything I do as if I'm a professional for the period I'm doing it, and then I move on. So I live the life of an Olympic swimmer. I live the life of a powerlifter. And to be honest, the powerlifting and the speed work on the track really helped with butterfly. But what happened was is that I accidentally learned how to swim front crawl, because you can't swim big sets of butterfly. I thought, oh right. So come the end of 2019, I thought, well, I'll have a go at aquathlon swimming and running. And I found a race that was close to my parents' house, so I could combine it with a visit to England. And I really enjoyed it. So the following year, 2020 became the year of triathlon, so I took up triathlon.
Okay.
<That's a> joke. So I took it up, and lo and behold, I qualified for the Irish aquathlon team to go to the World Championships. Not because I was a great swimmer. I actually turned out to be a super duper drafter. I accidentally was in the right place at the right time and was surrounded by these really fast swimmers. So I had a really brilliant swim and happened to be a fast runner. So unfortunately, because of COVID, the World Championships, you know, didn't take place. But, you know, I carried on training. Then all the symptoms of menopause hit really hard. And then I thought, right, let's regroup. So I focused. I had a fallow year where I just thought, I'm going to carry on training. I'm going to try and really enjoy this. But I think I got to that stage where you maybe were when you're about 30, when I thought, I'm not sure what's going on here, because movement was everything to me. It was my backup plan. It was where I went when life was tough, and life is getting, you know, tougher and tougher at the moment for all of us. And I thought, I've got nowhere to go because this has become tough too. And I really enjoyed the fact that, you know, as all of us do when we become quite good at things, you don't have to be world class, but you think, you know, there's something in it. I can see myself progressing, you know, especially with things like weightlifting. If you are diligent and follow the program, you will lift heavier and heavier weights, even if it's just half a kilogram, you know, 1 pound. And it's that satisfying enough. And that, even that stop, it was really hard just to stand still. And I was at the point of, well, I don't know if this is it, and I'm just going to have to sort of trundle around and become a jogger. And you know, that's UK number one insult to a runner is
that jogger. That is.
Yeah.
Well, I take that back. I was in the woods, and I run trails, so I'm on a mountain bike trail, and I stepped aside, let the cyclist go by, and I said, have a good ride. And he said, great, have a good hike. And I was like, didn't you see me running before I stepped into the brush to let you go by?
Yeah.
It's like, don't call me a hiker when I'm out there. I may be running slow, but I'm running.
I know. Well, I actually stopped to educate the local community. So I run very early in the morning when the dog walkers are out. And that's when I do my hill reps. So I run hard up, and then I either walk down or I jog down and have a static recovery. And they would come up to me and say, look, you're doing really well, because you will get to the stage where you can run continuously.
Yes.
And I just said, oh, well, I'm doing this on purpose. And then after that, they would say, oh, there she is. She's doing it on purpose.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, that getting over that, accepting, I had to accept what my body was doing and then have new plans. And that's when I decided, well, this year I've become even more focused. So I've already started preparing for 2023. So I stopped after the 12 weeks of butterfly. I stopped. When I've started again, it is really, really hard. So I'm training as Caleb Dressel. That's how I see myself. He's the best butterfly in the world. He's the best diver in the world. So I'm having to learn to dive off racing blocks, streamline, turn. Then there's butterfly itself. The shortest distance you can race is 50 meters, also an ultra marathon when it's swimming butterfly. I'm doing that. And then shorter on the track. So I'm going for 200 and 400 instead of 400 and 800, because it's a similar energy system, just to see what I can do. So I'd say the menopause hormone therapy, or what we call HRT, is really kicking in, but I'm lifting super, super heavy. Everything is more high intensity. And I really feel, and I don't know what it's like for you, but part of the attraction of movement is that vigorous feeling that you're inhabiting every inch of your body and it's working, and you really feel kind of fresh, even if you're in a really tough session. And it really set, I do all my training first thing in the morning. And if I do multiple trainings, I try and get those done in the morning, and then I work in the afternoon and evening. So the best part of my day is, like, if I have trained, I feel brilliant. And I love putting that tick. I love my Garmin saying done. And I'm not even competing against myself because I don't subscribe to that either. Mm-hmm. I'm Team Jane, and the part of me that's swimming butterfly, I think, and I'm in the water going, come on, you know, like I'm cheering myself on, you know, thinking, am I going to make it to the end of the pool alive? It's only 25 meters, but I don't know if I'm going to make it. Wow. And I'm constantly surprised when I make it. It's just brilliant.
I had a question from something you mentioned previously. You said that you felt like you were 30 years old again.
Yeah.
But yet in an older body. So I kind of made the assumption that was a more of a mental shift for you, a mindset.
Well, no,
mindset or your energy.
It's the physical shift. It's like, okay. Oh, I remember this. I remember what it's like to get up and your body is like a collie dog. It says, move. Come on, let's go. Oh, I've got loads of energy left, you know, and my head is, you know, clear. And whereas up until that point, it's like, I just feel like an old lady, you know, my bones are creaking, my ligament. I was spraining my ankles in the pool. And that's to do with hormonal changes. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's a big conversation that started in the UK. It's a massive conversation that started in the female athlete community because there are about 34 of symptoms of menopause. And a lot of them you would only stumble on if you were physically active. So including like, you know, okay. reduction in aerobic capacity and all that kind of stuff, reduction in muscle mass in spite of weight training, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I suddenly thought, oh right, it's like, have you seen that film, Rider Haggard? I don't know how many times I've seen it.
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, you haven't? It surprised me. So she is, she's this goddess. She's an immortal goddess, and she's gone through. She's been in the Fountain of Youth, and she is travels through time to find her soulmate who's been reincarnated, and she wants to tempt him back into the flame of eternal youth so they can spend eternity together. And he's, you know, a bit worried about this. You know, he finds her attractive and everything, but he's not sure if eternity is for him. And she goes to demonstrate by getting into the flame of eternal youth. And then she rapidly ages and crumbles to dust. And that's how I felt I was going, that suddenly I'd lost control. I, you know, wasn't recognizing my body. I didn't feel vital and alive. And I felt like I'd gone into that flame, you know, once too often. Mm-hmm. But now I feel, and it wasn't that there wasn't any life left in me. It wasn't though I wasn't enjoying being physically active. It was hard. And I work with women who don't have a healthy relationship with food in their body and who want to become more physically active, but don't find it easy to get motivated. Mm-hmm. And I think the positive thing to come out of that experience was, oh, right, I get it. This is
what
it's like when it's really hard every time and you don't feel you're improving. And I did this for 2 years. Turning up, training, feeling absolutely awful, being constantly hungry. And I couldn't say, it didn't really matter that I couldn't say no to food because I wasn't putting weight on. But I thought, okay, I understand this now. So I think from an empathy point of view, I really get it when people say, look, you know, exercise is hard. Whereas before it was, oh, like, yeah, it's going to be hard for about 3 months, but then you're going to feel really great. But that doesn't necessarily happen as we get older. Obviously, I don't know what it's like for men, but certainly for women, you know, our life does get interrupted. And then we've got this new body that we have to get used to and, you know, learn to love and look after in a completely different way. But I think now I feel like I really value what I've got now. It's the most precious thing to me. And I will keep allowing it to play. So my mindset, I suppose, for sport is playfulness and being open to not necessarily, you don't have to be brilliant. The outcome isn't, I'm going to get this particular time. A good outcome is I totally enjoyed the journey and I gave that journey everything it asked of me. And then whatever happens when I stand on that racing block, I mean, I've only just started to learn to dive. I'm also in a relay team, individual medley, and I'm swimming the butterfly leg. And I feel a bit inadequate because everybody's got a swimming background, mm-hmm. or a synchro swimming background, and not me. And we had a coach come. He's my swim coach. He came to teach us how to dive. And he just said, Jane, dive. And I thought, well, I don't know how to dive. He said, just dive. And I'm on this racing block. And it feels like I'm, you know, I don't know if you've heard of Tom Daly. He's our best high diver. And I thought, I'm just going to have to hurl myself off. So I hurled myself off. Off the pool came out. And he said, oh, right. He said, I didn't realise. I ended up with two black eyes and cut on my nose, bruises over my ribs. And literally every time I dive every Tuesday night off the blocks, I come back out with bruises.
So do you hit the bottom of the pool?
No, it's what it is. It's my racing goggles.
Oh, okay.
So unless your head angle is correct, so you need your chin under. Mm-hmm. So with head angle and also the angle of entry. So if you're too flat, you know, you can, the impact is quite severe. But it's one of those things, the more you do it, the better you become at it. But I'm paying the price through a bit of bruising, which, to be honest, I don't mind because I am improving. It's the same with butterfly. It's really hard. And sometimes I don't understand why I do things. So, you know, in terms of mindset, a lot of people talk about getting in touch with your why. You've got to have a really big why. And once you get in touch with that, you can go on forever. And sometimes I think, I don't know why.
Yeah.
All I know is I want to do it. I will learn why along the way. Maybe.
Yes.
Maybe.
Well, I'm glad you said that because I'm the same way. It's like people say you need a big why. I'm like, yeah, it didn't resonate for me at all. And for some people, that is a huge thing. But
yeah,
but there are a lot of people who don't.
It's a good sign because I think, you know, it means that you can carry on without the why or letting the why handle itself. Because my view is that, yeah, I have got a reason and it's currently outside my conscious awareness. I am becoming consciously aware. So one of the tricks to swimming butterfly is being relaxed. I'm probably the least relaxed person you'll ever meet. And I try really hard. And when you try really hard, I try really hard at everything, I give 100%. And when you try really hard when you're swimming, you don't swim very well. So I've had to learn how to relax. And in my head, I'm saying, relax, 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 relax. Because obviously I'm saying, relax, relax, relax. I'm not relaxed. And so what butterfly is doing, so my current belief about my why is I'm going to become a little bit more relaxed about life through this experience of doing something that looks like you're completely unrelaxed. And also with diving and with butterfly, it's a constant dialogue between relaxation and tension. And I think mastering the shift from being tense into relaxed and having that control over being tense and relaxed is actually quite a useful skill to have. So I use sport, and I think it'll be, you know, the same for ultra running, because ultra running also had a profound impact on me psychologically, is to learn a little bit more about what's going on in me outside my conscious awareness. That's the thread. I'm following a thread, mm-hmm. but I'm in the dark about what that thread is, but I trust the direction of travel.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you talked about your why, and it was the day before I was going to run 100 miles, the night before, my wife, she couldn't understand what I was doing. And she said, why are you doing this? And I realized then I had never answered that question for myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't have an answer for her. And I was like, and it took me a while. I finally came back about 5 minutes later and I said, I need to know if I have what it takes to do this. I need to know if I am enough if I have enough to meet this challenge. And, you know, that's something that I'd never really done in my life before.
Yeah.
And so, but But yeah, I went through all the training without knowing my why. So it's like,
yeah.
But you say you don't need to know. But say yours is developing as well. And so
yeah, it's emerging. And I suppose it's a kind of adventure as well. So it's an undertaking which I'll give everything to with an unknown outcome and being at peace with what that outcome is. So you're saying you need to know whether you could do it. And for me, it's like, I wonder how far I can go. I wonder if I can do it. But it doesn't matter if I don't, because that wasn't the point. The point was actually to try and see if I could.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and so that was really a turning point in my life, you know, of kind of bringing to me where I am now, you know, on the podcast. And you know, I did it. And now I'm going, okay. You know, I look at people who are in their 80s who are running 100 miles, yeah. And I'm like, there's my next adventure. You know, as I want to keep this adventure going and be those people in their 80s who are doing amazing, epic things.
Yeah. And the other thing that's brilliant, Eric, this is a secret, so I'll lower my voice, is you actually start to win as you get older because there's no one else doing it.
Right. Well, and that's, you know, the 100-mile race that I had to DNF, there were a lot of people who did because of the trail conditions. But I realized if I would have been able to finish, I would have been the only person left in my age group that was still out there running.
Yeah. No, it's brilliant. Just keep going. Yeah. The medals are going to come.
Well, and that's kind of what endurance is about. I mean, you've taken your, you know, kind of your mindset for ultra running, that endurance, that mindset, and it pivoted. So it's more toward life than it is toward, you know, what distance can you run. You're doing speed work, which is amazing.
I think it's really, I think it's, and this is an interesting thing, is that, you know, people talk about, well, this is who I am. But I don't think this is who I am is anything limited. And, you know, who else could I be? And trying on those different identities, I think if you're playful with it. So at the moment, I'm part of a relay team and we're training for our first gala in February. And that's a kind of a test to see how we do. And we're all training for the Ulster Championship. So Northern Ireland is the north part of the island of Ireland. So Northern Ireland's part of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, so the United Kingdom, and then Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, is a separate country. And so there's a lot of political conversation about that, which I won't get into.
Well, and we'll see, you know, we always hear, you know, when I was growing up, there was the, you know, the conflict between the two.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so, but I didn't realize that Southern Ireland was its own republic. I always thought that the whole of Ireland was part of Great Britain.
So we're two separate countries at the moment.
Okay.
And there are only 1.4 million people in Northern Ireland. And so what that means is, from a racing point of view, it's usually the same people, but there's also limited racing opportunities. So we have Ulster Championships, Masters Championships for swimming in May time next year. And it's really hard to get into, not from a qualifying point of view, but because everybody wants to do it. It's really the only Masters race available. And so we're all training towards that. And I've this is new to me, being part of a club, all that kind of thing is totally new to me. It's going to be my first galas coming up next year. So I'm trying on that. I am, you know, I'm a swimmer. Mm-hmm. And so what Facebook, I share the journey because it's quite funny because I'm usually a disaster at it for the first, well, a couple of years, a total disaster. And then suddenly it comes together because I do stick at things. So when I give an update, we have a team training session, a technical training session with equipment on a Tuesday night. And I do a news splash, an update. And I talk about us as the North Coast, so I live on the North Coast of Northern Ireland, the North Coast premier female Masters relay team. That in my mind is who we are, even though we're probably the only female Masters team, that's who we are. And I think, and we've got Team Kit, and I'm all for playing dress up in my head, in my kit. So I'm trying on the persona of being a fly specialist. I'm seeing what it's like. I train hard. I look at what Caleb Dressel does. I talk to my coach. I lift super heavy weights. My body has changed so much. I started training back in September for fly. And I still run. And I participated in a trail race. I love trail racing as well, a running trail race. And they had all the pictures of, I think there were a couple of hundred runners. It was a small race. And all the race pictures came out. And I said to my husband, I said, well, that is typical, isn't it? Everybody else has got a picture of them looking great running, and there's not a single picture of me. He said, what are you talking about? He said, there you are. And I looked, and it was me, and I did not recognize myself because my whole body had changed. Massive shoulders, big thighs. So I'm normally built, I've sent you a picture of me in my triathlon kit where I'm quite, you know, lean and wiry. But because my training has changed, my body has changed. And I thought, that's absolutely amazing because I don't recognize myself, but I am heading towards 60. And they say, oh, you know, later life, you expect changes really slowly, if at all. And I thought, no, look, my body has changed itself with, relatively speaking, very little effort. This is unbelievable. And I think it gives you confidence, you know, like you're saying, and I think it's totally realistic. Why wouldn't you set goals for running in your 80s? I listened to a podcast. Now, I can't remember. Peter Attia, is it? And okay. He was talking about the marginal decade. And it's really worth listening to the podcast. It's an excerpt about 6 minutes. And he said the marginal decade is your last decade of life. And usually people who are in that marginal decade are totally aware that they're probably in their last years. And he says, if you consider your marginal decade, think about what you want to be doing. Do you want to be running marathons, ultra marathons, lifting weights, doing triathlons, performing in the, you know, a philharmonic orchestra? Because a lot of people say, well, when I retire, then these are all the things I can do. And he says, No. Because now you're maybe in your 50s or 60s. What do you need to be doing on a daily basis to live that marginal decade in the way you want? So I think having your eye on, like, these are the kind of things I want to be doing, and then living the life now that will allow your body and your mind to be able to get the most out of that. And, you know, all things being equal, you know, because things happen, you know, my parents are coming up to 80 and both physically active, but I can see, and they say, look, this is my, you know, your DNA is coming out now. Various things are happening, even though they've looked after their bodies their whole lives. And there's probably not much you can do about that. They've done their best to mitigate everything. And those things will happen. But I think if you stack the deck in your favor, the opportunities for being 80 and 90, what you can actually do. You know, have you heard of the Iron Nun?
She was the first one that I saw that was doing that. I was like, okay, I'm going to be her. And now I've run across, you know, there was somebody I heard of in, it was a mountain race in Europe. He was in his 90s.
Wow.
And he was the last place, but he got to the top of the mountain and back down. And, so I'm looking at these people and thinking, you know, I'm going even farther than that. I think, you know, you talked about marginal decade. I'm thinking my marginal decade should start when I'm 110. So
yeah. Are you? Yeah.
And I talked to somebody.
See you there. Wait for me.
Well, I will save a place for you. I'm a few years ahead of you. But there was another man, and I don't think I talked to him on the podcast. I think I just read it. He said his goal was to break the record, or to qualify for Boston when he's 120. And so, you know, that is doable. That is possible. It's you know, there's not a reason that we have to accept the fact that your bodies are going to decline when you get older.
Yeah. And I think those things are really useful. Believing you can do things opens up so much more in terms of possibility than believing you're done. And I think, and the older you get, the more of, well, I'm hoping it's going to change and that there'll be more people who think, no, let's carry on. Let's be vital. And let society accommodate that as well, because it really annoys me. And when you know, look at our local gyms who are advertising a classes for the, you know, keep moving in your 50s, and they're like basically training your eyebrows to go up and down. I think, no, that's not what 50 means, you know, or 60 yes, or 70.
And unfortunately, that is a common common belief among people, in their 40s. And I see that on, and Facebook runners will say, well, what am I going to be able to do when I'm 50? I'm like, you're only 50. I mean, I run with people who are, in their 50s and, really, really doing well. And that's not something you have to accept. I know that you are also a mindset coach. And so how does your mindset work with your clients, and you, how do you help use that on yourself to keep yourself
two things for work. So one is I'm a coach, and the other thing is I'm a writer, and I've been a coach since 1997. And I think being an athlete and having to work close to your own limits does help from a coaching perspective. But I trained in lots of different things, including NLP and hypnosis. And I'm very fascinated by the idea of the unconscious mind, the part of us that automates our behaviors, that pops up these self-talk at critical moments, like, oh, this is too hard. This is too hard, Jane. Stop. Everybody stop. We've had enough of this. And because I've heard that so often, I had to develop various strategies and find out what works for me. And so when I'm working with clients, I look at all sorts of things, from identity. So one of the most powerful things that can drive all the other stuff that might get in the way, like beliefs about what's possible for you, behaviors and habits and so on. If you have an expansive, resourceful identity in place, then that can overcome all those issues. So if you have the identity of athlete, so in the CrossFit, I spent a time doing a bit of CrossFit, and what I really love about the CrossFit community is no matter what shape you're in when you arrive, you are called an athlete. And having the identity of the athlete, then that's got a whole load of beliefs, attitudes, and behaviors attached to it. So what do athletes do? What do they eat? How do they look after their body? How do they fuel? What do they think about what they're doing? It's very different from, oh, I'm just little old me who was rubbish at sports at school. I mean, I was enthusiastic and community-minded. And when no one would do things, I would volunteer and be completely rubbish at them. So putting this shot, I landed on my foot. I did the high jump. I was out on the first hike, so I actually ran under the high jump. I was trying, but I was rubbish. And, a lot of people say that experience at school, I can't do those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So one, and it's only what I do with myself as well. So I go straight to the easiest thing you can do. And that's like, who do I need to be? Or who would it be fun to be while I'm doing this thing? So while I'm in the pool, I'm Caleb Dressel. While I'm pushing off the wall, I'm now Michael Phelps. It's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And what goes with that? So I'm really driven. Like, I will push really hard. I'm lifting weights and, grunt and growl, because, like, I'm Caleb Dressel. He's an Olympic champion. He doesn't say I'm not doing this today. Mm-hmm. And so the invitation is like, well, who would it be fun to be? And then I find out a little bit about them, and I found out that Caleb Dressel, he is a beast. In the gym, I'm thinking, I really like Caleb. There's a lot of commonality between me and Caleb. Maybe I could be Caleb. And then I lift heavy weights and I think, well, like, what about the Incredible Hulk, who's green? Well, maybe I'm green Caleb. And so my current identity is green Caleb. And he goes everywhere that I go. He's in the supermarket when I'm buying food, he's when I'm training, when I'm getting up at 5:15 and thinking, I don't want to really get up at 5:15. Well, what's, you know, Caleb says, we're going to the pool, because that's what Olympians do, even though obviously I'm not an Olympian. So playing with identity and realizing it's not fixed, and that people genuinely have a much smaller view of who they are, and that who they are is, you know, there's so much more possibility. You know, who are you that's not who you think you are, beyond all of those things? So breaking down the boundaries that have become ingrained over the years about our identity, and you hear it in people, I'm only a 5K runner. I'm just a couch to 5K runner. No, you're not. Oh, and they won't say, they'll even say, I'm not even a proper runner because I only jog. And so the first step is like, I'm a runner. And then more expansive than that is I'm an athlete. And that allows for so much more growth. So if you're an athlete, well, actually you could try swimming, even though you haven't swum before. You could try all these other things. So I think working identity, and then beliefs, you know, what would you have to believe in order to support that journey? And what do you really believe right now that might need adjusting? And then NLP offers a whole range of tools and techniques. And then you might have self-talk. So I have self-talk on the bike. The self-talk is, stop! Laura, what are you doing? What, this is, I have the Laurel and Hardy. That's another fine method you've got yourself. And that came out on the racing blocks. Jane, that is another fine mess. So what, I leap, and everyone says, oh, that's too hard, Jane. You can't do that. That's too hard. I say, I can do that. I can do that. And then I start and think, you can't do that, Jane. That's too hard. But it's too late at this stage, because I've committed, and I know. So my belief is, once I've committed, I'm doing it. Nothing's going to stop me. So when I hear the, that's another fine mess you've got me into, I have a mantra, but that mantra comes out automatically now. I've done it so often, and the mantra is if this is what it takes, I'm doing it. So I have that conversation with that voice, if this is what it takes, I'm doing it. And the other voice goes, okay. And then if it gets, you know, my heart rate goes like, it says you should actually be dead, which is quite frequent. So yeah, if this is what it takes, if immortality is what it takes, I'm doing it. So I think then the state you're in while you're training, and the state you're in while you're planning, the state you're in when you're deciding what you're going to do, should not be a state of lack. Oh, I can't, or I can't do this. I haven't got enough of this to do. I haven't got enough experience. I haven't got a coach. I haven't got this. It should be an expansive state. So I'm always like playful. What's going to give me joy? And when I'm thinking, right, this is just a big game. This is a game. I, you know, this is a game of dare. I wonder what I can do next. And what I would choose to do in that state is very different from, oh gosh, you know, I'm you know, nearly 60. You know, I've got wrinkles, and my muscles are, I don't know. You know, my supermodel years are over. Well, Eric, they never really started, but I'm never going to be able to do this. I'm never going to be upset. Even things I've never tried, things that I'll never be able to, oh, I couldn't possibly, really get in the way of you tasting from life's great buffet. So the state you're in really can drive the kind of decisions you make about what you do and what you believe is possible for you. And then underneath all of that is that psychological strategic ability to say, okay, so what do I need to do now to make that happen? So I want it to happen. I think it can happen. I don't care if it doesn't happen, but I'm going to give everything as me, as Green Caleb, to make it happen. What's missing now? What do I need? So I need a structured plan. So I've got, you know, I go the whole hog. This is what I'm eating. And I plan out my nutrition every day. I eat like an athlete. I have a coach. I train like an athlete. And even though I have to work, for me, the most important thing is, by the way, I do love my work, in case any of my clients are listening. I do love my work. But I've also given 100% in the pool, lifting weights, out on the run, whatever it says to do, I do it and adjust along the way. And that adjustment has been really important. That's something that menopause taught me, is having to adjust and having to not do things. So Ultra is a really good place to hide if you run a general endurance pattern. So I don't just mean physical endurance, but I think a lot of endurance runners will run a true grit pattern where they keep going, mm-hmm. even when they shouldn't keep going. And in life, in the past, I will have run that pattern in other areas of my life. It's really great when you're an endurance athlete, because that, when everyone else stops, you have the confidence to know that actually you're going to be the one that keeps going. But if you're in a bad situation in a, you know, relationship or work, there are times when you should actually stop, but you don't. Mm-hmm. And so with training in a different way, where your body is taking a different hit, I had to learn this pattern isn't serving me. So I think that's, and knowing that, then I thought, well, what can I do about it? I can, you know, deal with the pattern. I can destabilize that pattern, and there are a lot of ways into that. But one of the easiest things to do is say, okay, I'm going to take it on a coach, because that coach is an expert. But also, I do know other things about myself. So I think self-awareness is a big part of mindset as well. And I'm aware that I'm a good girl. I never broke any rules at school. I would be mortified if I broke a rule. You know, I've no points on my driving license for speeding. I'm a super good girl. So if the coach tells me, don't do this, do this, I do exactly what he says. And I report back in, and like, there's me being a good girl. And so it works for me, because then I feel like, even though I could have done more, and the pattern in me would say, just keep going, you're really good. So I'm really good at keeping going. I am, you know, endurance is something that I'm good at, but I've learned that to be good at something completely different, you have to switch. You have to use a different type of fuel. And that endurance pattern, that endurance thinking, is not going to work. The only time it works is to keep going with the training schedule, even when the schedule starts to bite. And so with butterfly, so if you lift heavy weight, so like a deadlift hits the central nervous system so hard, you know when you're kind of lifting heavy, because you have a deadlift sleep. And it's like a hammer comes about 3 or 4 hours after deadlifting, you think, I've got to have a nap. I've got to have a nap. And that's really common. And that's where I'm at with butterfly right now. It hits really hard. And there's something really satisfying about that, but I have to keep going. So if we're in a big set for butterfly, then I keep going. I do what's required of me to train my nervous system. And that endurance pattern helps with that, the keeping going when things get tough, but not to do more than's written on the piece of paper, and to allow the ebb and flow. So my training will follow. I have hard weeks and easy weeks. And it's different because I'm an older athlete. I don't train like younger athletes. And it's having to manage that tension between seeing them doing all the stuff that I used to do. For me now, I'm doing 50% of the volume I was doing 5 years ago, 50%. And that's a big drop, but I'm starting to, I'm running faster than I was. I am running faster than I was 5 years ago. So for me, that was a convincer. So sometimes from a psychological perspective, people need a convincer experience. You know, what would convince you to know that this is either possible for you? And for me, it's training, sticking to it. So I'm going to give this 3 months. And then I've got a conscious convincer. Yep, this works. And then I just say, I'm all in. I'm all yours. Tell me what to do. And I'm doing it. Yeah.
So a lot of people, I mean, and I talk to, especially ultra, you talked about ultra runners knowing, you know, the having the endurance down, but that you didn't quite say it this way, but they can actually end up injuring themselves. Mm. And yeah. And I've talked to athletes that, well, I've seen athletes online that their response to pain is to block it. Mm. You know, that, and your mind is powerful enough, you can block out the physical pain and keep going and injure your body. And you know, I've talked to several, you know, I've run with some runners who have finished ultra marathons with stress fractures in their legs. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and they kept going. So what was it in you that enabled you to say, wait a minute? I mean, what was kind of the mindset?
The mindset was
if there are people who are stuck in their identity, this is what I have, and yeah, I can't do anything else. So how did you make that switch for yourself?
It's back to that marginal decade. It's like, look, I'm here for longevity, and if I don't win this race or finish this race, well, you know, what's the relationship between where I'm at now and what I'm doing and where I want to be? And so I wouldn't pay the price of a broken limb, because that actually gets in the way of the thing I'm doing it for in the first place, which is a vital long life. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's about expanding the horizons of what it is you're actually trying to achieve. You know, it's not just one race. And also, if you believe that this is the race, this might be the last time I'll do it, maybe that would drive people to say, well, I'm going to pay the price. But for me, it's like, well, this, I respect my body. And I think as you get older, and menopause has taught me this as well, I have a deep respect for my body. I know I've only got one of them and I'm going to look after it. And if it's giving me a pain message, you know, what is the purpose of that? And, you know, how should I be best paying attention to it and looking after my body? And it may mean that, so I took a fallow year from racing, you know, I cut my training hours by 50% because I'm thinking, well, I'm in this for the long term, and I'm in it so that I will be that woman in her 90s on the track. I'm going to be her. And what is the price I pay? The price I pay is deeply respecting my body and looking after it to the best of my ability. And so I think if you're running through pain and you're getting stress fractures, that's a message. It's saying like, hey, look, there's something to pay attention to here. Will you respect this? And if you start to override it, and it's, you know, it's totally possible, you know, you see people fall over and they're grazed and there's a little bit of shock and it sees them through the pain. I think, yeah, that's fine. But you know, if you're getting stress fractures, your body will eventually break down, and you will not, first of all, you'll have that experience where it's almost like there's two parts of you. There's the mind and there's the body, and they should, they're a team, can't go anywhere without each other. But it's almost like you're making the decision. If you say, I'm ignoring you, body, mind, you're fine, I know you're strong enough to do this, I'm going to completely ignore you. And it's like that, okay, there'll be times where you can negotiate things and it's safe and healthy to do so. And there are times you say, no, listen to that, we're a team. And if you do this now, you're on your own, mate. And that's what often happens. You're on your own and you think, I really love to be running that marathon, but I can't. You know why? Because my leg's in a cast and I keep getting injured and I can't rehab. And I think, you know, for me, it's like, think the long game. What's the long game here? And it's making that the deal. Am I prepared to jeopardize that for this moment of glory or satisfaction or fulfilling this need to complete something? And sometimes you'll get a yes. But I'm as the older I get, the more I get, no. And I've got to be prepared even to race and not race full pelt either, because I'm saying I've got one A race this year. Everything else is secondary. One. Mm-hmm. And if anything jeopardizes that, I don't do it.
So what is your A race this year?
Well, my A race for 2023 is the Ulster Championships. But I've always thought there's another championship later in the year, because I think I'm also learnt as I've got older that things can take time. And I also think it's really great. You know, you think, I'm getting older, but like you, I've got that thing, well, I've got a couple of years to master this, to get better at it. And butterfly, from my experience of learning front crawl, it'll take 2 or 3 years, I think, before I look anything as good as an 11-year-old does doing butterfly. And I've given myself permission to say, right, I am going to stick with this now. This is an opportunity for me because I love the feeling. If I didn't love doing it, I wouldn't. So I would say, right, I've done it. but I love because it's a total physical experience. Every inch of your body is active, and it feels so good in the water. And you know, your proprioceptive awareness, you've got to be aware of everything from the tip of your fingers to your toes. Rhythm is really important. I've given myself permission to continue. So it's a work in progress, but for next year, May is the first go at championships, if we can actually, you know, get in, and that's butterfly 50 meters. And I'm going to have a go on the track. That'll probably be June, 200 and 400 meters, maybe even shorter. So my parents gifted me a DNA test. It was part of Ancestry, and my dad's mapped out the whole family tree, and they gifted me a DNA test, and it gave traits. And one of the traits was endurance, whether you have elite endurance or whatever. And my dad's an elite endurance athlete. And so it didn't surprise me that I had got that. But he'd also got the sprinter gene. And I thought, oh, please let me have that one, because it's going to be really difficult to talk myself into being a sprinter if it says, and then you have got no sprinter gene. But I have. And in order, for example, for the gene to express itself, I've got to train it. So I'm even tempted with 100 meters. Now, if you looked at me, you think she is not a 100 meter runner. But then if you looked at me, you'd say she's not built to lift heavy weights. But there's that's what I've learned from that is, yeah, there's a lot of things you can do, even though you look like you can't do them. So I just like I'm giving that a go. Sprinting on the track, but I've got to be careful because I ran in spikes for the first time in 2019, and that I had for the very first time in a long time an injury. I damaged my Achilles, so I'm going to have to learn to just run in normal running shoes. I'm not going to take the risk of spikes, even though, you know, microseconds will be added to my hours on the track.
Well, adding microseconds is probably not worth an injury. So.
Yeah. The same with starting in blocks. I'll probably just crouch, but I wanted the experience of what is it like to run out of blocks. And it actually probably slowed me down. It's like at the moment diving, it takes me longer to swim a length of fly off the blocks than it does starting in the water. So I haven't cracked it yet. But it's all an experience, and I think it's all learning. And, you know, people say that an active mind, you know, keeps you vital for longer in older years. But I think any type of learning does, and physical learning is that. And I think, you know, as we get older, and, you know, you've got your ambitions for, you know, ultra running, is that you're having to learn new strategies all the time for training and moving your body, and you're getting to know. As your body changes, you're having to learn about it all the time. Every time you go out for a run, something might change. It's kind of like, are you a Star Trek fan?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you remember that one where Spock dies and then his coffin is jettisoned onto this planet? Mm-hmm. And then he rapidly ages, and then the whole planet is in turmoil, is a reflection of what's going on with him. And I think we have two periods of that in life, you know, when we're young up until early adulthood, and then as we age, it's all a new landscape, and every time things are changing, like my heart rate is beginning to behave in a different way, my sleep patterns are behaving in different ways, so how I metabolize food, even the food that suits my body for training, how much I can eat before I train, after I train, it's all changing. So it's all this learning going on completely free. All you have to do is go out and run, and then you're having a university seminar with one person in the room, which is you, every time you go out. And I think if you're fascinated by, you know, what's arising from moment to moment, I think it keeps you, I generally think it keeps your mind fresh.
And I read somewhere there were companies that were marketing to older people to keep your brain, you know, for brain health. And there was a series of puzzles and, you know, what they call them, brain teasers.
Yeah.
And I read a study somewhere, one of those things that I just read in passing and just stuck with me, that those actually aren't proven to really help with your, you know, with your cognitive, you know, keep your cognitive function going, but that challenging yourself to learn new things.
Yes.
You know, like, you know, something that is totally new that you have to learn, you know, not just solving puzzles, but actually learn. And if you add this physical component to it as well, that is proven to actually keep your cognitive ability fresh and keep you from declining.
Yeah. Oh, Eric, we're going to live forever.
Yes.
I can't believe it.
Yes.
Don't tell anyone these tricks.
I will not tell anyone. Of course, we just broadcast it to the world. Thank you so much, Jane, for the conversation. It's been delightful. Tell people how can we get a hold of you?
So I have a website, janetolbott.com. And for my writing, janetolbottwriter.com. I write dark fairy tales for adults. And I'm on Twitter @IntrepidJane and on Facebook as Jane Tolbott Humans Resourced.
Humans Resourced. Okay. I'll have the links in the show notes for this as well. So
thank you.
I appreciate it.
It's been lovely talking to you, Eric. Look forward to seeing you at some global championship in about 30 years' time.
Yes. Okay. I almost forgot this. I have the bridge questions that I do at the end of every show.
Who approaches the bridge of death must answer me these questions three. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, bridge keeper. I'm not afraid.
First question is, what is your must-have piece of gear?
My must-have piece of gear?
Or kit. I mean, I'm sorry. Kit is the British term, so.
Kit. What is my must-have? Well, depending on the sport, but for the pool, my must-have is my tempo trainer. It sits underneath my swimming cap, and it sets the pace. It's like a metronome, so it tells. And I love. It's like having your. It's like Ben Hur, you know, ramming speed underneath your cap.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yes. So is it? Does it vibrate then, or is it an audio?
It goes beep. Beep, beep, like that. And you can vary the speed. And it's I think, £30. I don't know how many dollars that is, about $40 or $50 maybe. I don't know what the exchange rate is at the moment. Mm-hmm. But the battery lasts for absolute ever. And you don't have to motivate yourself. If you're the kind of person who responds, who likes to perform, like I like to be a good girl, mm-hmm. And so, I'm being a good girl because I'm keeping up with the tempo trainer. Yeah.
So what is the tempo you set it at? I'm just curious.
It depends on the training session. So you can vary. And that's the joy of it. So if you've got a speed session, you can set a certain tempo. And if you've just got an endurance session, you can set it a different tempo. And it's good for training in race pace. So you wouldn't be able to use one of those in a race, open water or otherwise. But your body gets so used to it. So at the moment, I'm swimming without it, but I'm swimming at exactly the same speed. So I know how to pace myself.
Oh, that's,
and that's because I'm an inexperienced swimmer. So experienced swimmers wouldn't need that. But if you're just starting out, tempo trainer. Good Christmas present.
Right, and I've done some tempo work. Well, it's not tempo. It's actually for my running. I've used a metronome. And so my best pace is 173 steps per minute. So that's kind of what I try to train at. So, okay. Second question. I mean, this can be from any of your sports that you've been in, but usually it's trail runners. I ask, what is the strangest thing that you've seen when you've been out running?
Oh, well, the most, dazzling thing I've seen.
That will work too. whatever clicks in your mind.
It was Scotland, maybe a little bit later in the year, and we were camping. Me and my husband were camping in the back of a van. It was snowing, and we decided to go out for a run. And the snow was up to our thighs, and we were running with the only people around. You know, it was perfect conditions. It was obviously tough running. And we saw a stag, and you know, it was this time of year, so the night fell, clear sky, and there was a stag and the moon, and it was like, you know, it was absolutely amazing. And one of those pictures that stays in your mind forever.
That's amazing. And running at night in the snow, is there's nothing like it. And then to see that, that would be beautiful. So, okay, third question is, what word or phrase sums up your philosophy of life?
Play!
Play. I love that. I love that. Well, hey, thank you a lot, Jane. I appreciate you being with us.
It's been lovely to meet you, Eric. And thank you for the conversation. It's been revitalizing.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast. I do enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. The show notes for this episode and others are at ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can find this week's guest there, more information, links to their social media and website. There's also a podcast player there if you want to share this episode with somebody who does not normally listen to podcasts and doesn't have a podcast player on their phone. You can also find links there for my Amazon affiliate link, Crush Your Goals course, a short course I made to help you get your goals in order. Also, you can schedule a chat with me. My online calendar is there. All of these links are at the sidebar if you're on a laptop, or you have to scroll clear to the bottom if you are on a phone. If you did enjoy this episode and you do know somebody who might like it, take just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. Remember that an ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. You need a strong mindset for success no matter what your goal in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Thank you again for listening. I'll see you next time.